We are back with you for another edition of Pittsburgh Pop. Rob Owen, Tim Benz, glad that you're with us. I've returned from Canada. Rob, I was watching TV in a different country. It looks different. Even in Canada, things are different.
Does it? How so, Tim?
Well, I mean, I did get to see like Boston local news at my mom's place in Nova Scotia.
Sure.
But I did listen to and watch a lot of Canadian news. And it's a lot more NPR sounding.
Yeah,
we're listening to some of CBC, but you know, there's a lot more of an NPR vibe to Canadian television.
That doesn't surprise me. I think I have seen Canadian TV a couple times, and that does ring true.
I tried to start watching The Bear. Because I was on Canadian Wi-Fi.
Oh, so it blocked you from Hulu?
Well, I got onto Hulu, but to watch The Bear, you needed to have add-ons on Canadian Wi-Fi.
Probably because there's some, I don't know what the deal is, but there might be some territorial deal for that title with, I don't know, Hulu or somebody else.
So I've got to wait a little bit longer. I'll have to get in on The Bear at some point this week now that I'm back. I'll make that my treadmill show moving forward so I can get caught up on that. I got to say, before we really get rolling here, you're looking quite dapper in your Ted Lasso jersey.
Yes, thank you, Apple TV Plus. It just came in the mail.
Is that a Richmond official
it
jersey?
It is a Richmond club jersey, yes.
Very nice. Very colorful, the Richmond club jerseys.
It is.
As far as new content goes, how long is it going to be before we get much of it? We already talked about the writer's strike a couple times here on the podcast. Now
right.
We have the SAG after strike.
Yes, so the actors went out on strike last week, and I think it's going to be a while. So when it comes to new content, the streaming services, their pipelines aren't going to run dry immediately. I think my understanding is, and they may space things out more, so we may start to notice fewer new things all at once, coming in big batch, coming at us, you know, with like a fire hose, because they may start spacing things out, because if they don't, then first quarter of next year, that's when most of the services are going to start to be in a world of hurt. Casey Bloys said that was when HBO would start to be in trouble. I think Netflix could be further down the line. They tend to work farther ahead. But when it comes to fall TV, you know, CW and Fox announced new fall schedules, last week that are almost nothing but reality shows, unscripted entertainment. Fox does have its animated Sunday block that's scripted, that's done far enough in advance that you'll have originals of those shows, but yeah, it's gonna start to get all those shows you've wanted to watch and haven't had time to check out. Now you will have the time to do it, and I will tell you a little bit of background on the column I wrote last week. I talked to some of the striking actors, and I want to thank particularly Billy Gardell and David Conrad and Jonathan Adams, who talked to me for that SAG after strike story, because there were so many people who would not talk to me. I never heard back from reps for Ming-Na Wen, Donna Lynn Champlin, I think I heard back from Donna Lynn's person. Didn't hear back from Charles Esten, Jeremy Renner, Hugh Dillon, Julie Benz, your cousin, Jeff Goldblum, Zach Quinto. I did get a polite pass from Judith Light's people. Joe Manganiello wasn't available. Stephanie DeBruzzo didn't want to talk. And Michael Keaton was not available. So it was very different from when I did the striking writer story a couple months ago. In that instance, I only had one local writer who was nervous or unwilling to talk initially. But when it came to the actors, it was a lot of radio silence. And I don't know how much.
What do you think?
I don't know. My theory is it falls into, one of three buckets. The reps didn't want to be bothered asking them. That's bucket one. Bucket two, the actors just couldn't be bothered because they're on summer vacation or whatnot. And bucket three, they might, and I got the sense from a few of them that passed, that they might be okay with lambasting the AMPTP on social media, but they didn't want their names associated with it in a newspaper.
Do you think, from a representative standpoint, part of the issue might be that, you know, they want their actors to get to work. Like, this isn't something that they want to continue having to be discussed. And they don't
do wonder that. And part of me also wonders, have the actors already laid off their publicists? That's why the publicists are just saying no or not going to the actors. I mean, I don't know how quickly that happens, but a lot of these folks I started emailing the day before the strike actually happened, saying, hey, if this happens, will you talk to me? So the majority of them, I just didn't get any response from their reps. The three actors I did get, I think it helped that I, you know, had established relationships with them and had interviewed them many times over the past 23 years.
You think some of it might be they don't really know why they're striking?
Oh, no, I think they all know why they're striking. I think that's pretty clear.
What they're actually asking for? I mean, I'll ask you, what are they asking for the most? I mean, is this what are the core principles of what they're not happy with?
So the number one thing is the lack of transparency. In many ways, you could call this the Netflix strike, because on the one hand, you have Hollywood studios that have always been transparent. Ratings were published in newspapers for years every week. We get the box office scores for movies at every Sunday. Hollywood, always transparent about who's watching, what's a success. Tech, big tech, on the other hand, your Amazon, your Netflix, your Apple TV Plus, they do not like to share data. They keep that data all locked away in a box. And the Hollywood people who have gone the streaming route are sort of following that. But I think if you separated those two groups out, you could probably make some progress with the Hollywood folks, because they are accustomed to sharing that data. And the thing that that the actors and the writers both want, and why, you know, I think there is more similarities between the actors and the writers and the directors who did make a deal earlier this summer are a little different. But the actors and the writers, it's all about the residuals, because most actors, most writers, there are times in their careers where they aren't getting jobs and they have to live off the residuals. There are two things going with the residuals. So a writer for the One Day at a Time reboot posted to Twitter that when One Day at a Time, which started as a pop show, then they aired some reruns on CBS, and then it became a Netflix original production. Mike Royce wrote that what he got paid for one rerun of One Day at a Time on CBS was more than he got residuals from Netflix over the 4 to 6 years. It is literally pennies that they are paid for residuals on streaming services compared to what they got on broadcast. And it's not like they're getting paid huge upfront sums necessarily by Netflix either. So I think that the number one thing they're striking for, there are a lot of ancillary issues. AI is an issue. You know, just basic minimums are an issue. But I think that transparency and what it means, because here's another piece. If you do not make, and this is Screen Actors Guild, if you do not make $26,490 per year, either in direct income from projects or in residual income, you don't qualify for healthcare. There's an actor named Brendan Fair who was a series regular on the original Roswell, and he also was on The Night Shift on NBC a few years ago. He said in the past 3 years, he has only qualified for SAG-AFTRA healthcare one of those 3 years, and he just had three films released in the past year. Now, they were low budget, not, you know, direct-to-DVD or streaming movies, but it's, I think, residuals, that's the number one thing.
What does resolve it, do you think, Rob? What makes this go away?
I don't know. I mean, in the past, you know, the last writer's strike resolved both when the directors made a deal and because they wanted the Oscars to go on as normal. We don't have that. The Emmys are scheduled for September 18th. It seems highly unlikely they will happen then. They'll either get pushed to November or January, most likely. Is a senior statesman on the executive side going to come in and take the reins? Maybe. I don't know. I fear it's going to be a long strike, and maybe the AMTP ultimately breaks up and you have studios making deals with the writers and the actors, you know, like I say, I could see the Hollywood folks doing that before I could see the tech folks doing that.
Well, one show that is worth talking about right now is Justified, and there's a local tie there because they filmed back in Pittsburgh again.
They did. They shot the original pilot on the series, I think, in 2009 in Pittsburgh. And then they went to Southern California to shoot the rest of the series. That now they're doing Justified City Primeval, which is a sequel limited series, brings back the only real character who's back is Timothy Oliphant as U.S. Marshal Raylan Givens. And he's got gets dragged into a new assignment in Detroit, Michigan. For the very last episode, it's an 8-episode limited series. For the last episode, they needed a prison, and the Illinois Bureau of Corrections pulled access to a prison at the last minute. And so Michael Dinner, the director who directed the Justified pilot in Western Pennsylvania, but more importantly, directed Manhunt Deadly Games in Western Pennsylvania, remembered filming at SCI Greensburg. And so they pulled up the production and moved what the folks they needed to Western Pennsylvania last summer to shoot a couple days at SCI Greensburg. Dinner told me that some of the local crew who worked on that were the same people who worked on the pilot back in 2009, which isn't that surprising to me. I can't tell you exactly who's in those scenes or what they're about because it's a little bit of a spoiler. But for fans of Justified, it will definitely be worth watching.
All right. Also want to bring up an old show that I think a lot of people are going to have some interest in. I don't know, Rob, did you keep up to date with tabs on the story over the weekend about that Long Island serial killer?
Yeah. The architect guy. I did read about that some.
Yeah. And there was a movie about his serial killings. There's like a 90-minute I don't think it was a TV show. I think it was a movie that was on Netflix called The Lost Girls.
Mm.
Like what we saw with Bay Area Rapist, The Golden State Killer.
Right.
You know, like those, what's going to become of the serial killer? Will they ever catch the serial killer? Well, they caught him now.
Right.
Everybody was running to Netflix, from what I understand, to watch this, to go back and see if they could find clues along the way. Even though it was a dramatization, there were nuggets of truth in how it was woven together, obviously, to see, you know, now in retrospect, what was missed and why wasn't this solved earlier? And
right.
It's a strange phenomenon that a movie that maybe nobody else remembered from many years ago, I think it was from 2020, maybe 2019, all of a sudden has shot up the charts because the actual real case was resolved.
Right. It'll be interesting to see. That's the kind of thing where you could imagine them you know, rushing a sequel into production, but because it was a scripted project, that's not going to happen anytime soon. Maybe when the strikes settle, if that case is still in the news, still winding its way through the courts, maybe they'll go back and revisit it with a sequel.
Yeah, it's retroactive true crime podcasting, you know, like
yeah.
Based on a true story, but in real life here, so to speak.
Right.
All right. So let's get to some local stories here, Rob. And, you know, we've already had the unfortunate passing of Stan Saverin. That made everybody really sad around here in Pittsburgh, particularly in my line of work. And now we found out that Albie Oxenrider, another longtime sportscaster here in Pittsburgh, has had a significant health scare. And that's why he's been off television for a while, correct?
Yes, he had heart valve replacement surgery, I think last month sometime. So he has been off the air for quite a bit of time. It's something that I'd certainly heard about and had been trying to track down and get confirmation of. And the station posted a statement last week, didn't bother to email me, even though I'd been asking them. But they posted a statement last week acknowledging that he had had this surgery and that he was on the mend. At this point, it doesn't seem like Albie's going to have anything more to say about that. But the good news is that he is feeling better, getting his strength back. I don't think there's an idea of when he'll be back on the air yet, but I think my sense is that he's at least home from the hospital and doing the things that you need to do to heal from heart surgery. I know from folks in my family who have had that oftentimes the emotional piece is as grueling, if not more so, than the physical piece. So we wish Albie great good luck in his recovery going forward.
Yeah, I've corresponded with Albie via text a couple times since he went off the air, and he's trying to keep spirits high. I think he would love to get back to work, but there's still a long road ahead when it comes to recovery before any of that is possible. So I know that Jenna Harner, Chris Carter, they've taken on some of the work, especially when it comes to the Sunday evening talk show that I do, The Final Word. That's something that Albie always did as part of
right.
his hosting duties, and now that's fallen to Jenna and Chris. And yeah, it is it's something that, you know, a lot of us in the sports media have known about, but due to the wishes of Albie and I think the station too, everybody's kind of kept under their hat because we wanted to make sure he was in a good enough place to at least talk about it publicly,
right,
to be honest with you. And hopefully he'll be okay moving forward. One other story, Rob, of a local interest, especially as it relates to sports, the ACC on the CW. What's going on there?
Yeah, so the CW did a deal with the ACC for a series of football and basketball games over, I think, the next 2 years, maybe 3 years. And it starts with a Pitt Panthers football game on September 9th. But the question is, where will you watch it? Because WPCW will disaffiliate from the CW on August 31st. So at this point, that game does not have a home in Pittsburgh. Now, everyone I've talked to at the CW has said, oh, yeah, we're going to have a home. We're going to have a home. But they won't answer the question, would you accept a home as a digital subchannel, a .2 or a .3 station, like 22.2, 22.3, 22.4? So I don't know where they're going to end up. I mean, the most likely scenario would seem to be WPNT, Channel 22, but they have an affiliation with My Network TV. Could they get out of it and put the CW on their main channel, or would they take the CW as a sub channel? Don't know at this point, but everyone at the CW seems to think that they will have a broadcast home in Pittsburgh. It just remains to be seen where that will be.
And will it be in time for the game?
I mean, I think that it will, because they know their last day on WPCW. So I suspect that they are working to make that happen, but we'll see.
All right, Rob, what do we have coming up for TV Talk and TV Q&A?
TV Q&A, I get back into the what will happen to AT&T Sportsnet with a little bit more speculation. I would say informed speculation. So that'll be TV Q&A, and then TV Talk. It is time once again for Shark Week. And so I talked to one of the scientists involved in one of their crazy shows this year.
Wait a minute, Shark Week? I thought we were up to Shark Month. Isn't it Shark Month now?
Well, I think unofficially you can say Shark Month because
Sharkapalooza or something.
Sharkapalooza,
like that?
Yeah, Sharknado, which is rerunning this week, I think. Yeah, because National Geographic Channel has their Shark Fest sometime, but Shark
That's
Week.
What it is, Shark Fest. I was watching Shark Fest in Newburgh, New York in the drive home, and it was the episode where the orca whales go after the great whites. A classic, Rob.
A classic. Well, Shark Week starts Sunday, July 23rd on Discovery, and I think some of it will also be on Max or Discovery Plus, but it is coming at you soon.
All right, and I'm back at it. Breakfast with Ben's after a week off. You can listen to our Madden Monday podcast today, and a reminder that all of our podcasts starting tomorrow on the Fans First Network, so subscribe there via Spotify, Apple, however you get your podcasts. Moving forward tomorrow, that's where you will get them. I'll link them in stories as usual moving forward so you can read them through the Trib. But to subscribe and get them on the regular, you got to do it through the Fans First Network, again, through Apple, Spotify, and just go to the Breakfast with Ben's page and go to the Mark Madden podcast today, and we've got a link up there for you to do so. All right, that'll do it for us, and we're back with you next week here in Pittsburgh Pop.